This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn. I'm Chua Eun-taek. Did you know that 2016 was 1 second longer than we thought it would be? A report published recently in the Proceedings of the Royal Society found that the amount of time it takes for Earth to complete a single rotation on its axis has slowed by 1.8 milliseconds per day over the course of a century. This means that over the course of two millenniums, that's year zero to year 2000, the time discrepancy adds up to about 7 hours. Here to explain what this means for our relationship to time is Professor Renugath Varatharaju, Deputy Vice Chancellor, Industry and Community Relations at University Putra Malaysia. Professor, welcome.
Thank you so much, Chua. A great pleasure to be with you here to share a bit more on space science in general.
Speaking about space science, you have a very interesting CV, a PhD in spacecraft system from Dresden, Germany. Maybe you can start with you telling us what this study entails.
All right. Yes, I've started off, in fact, from doing a master's, basically, in launches and satellite in Toulouse. Completed that about 2 years. Then I went into specializing in a spacecraft control system in Germany. That took me about 3 years. Then back to country and, spearheading lots of research works, especially looking into the spacecraft control, spacecraft systems, navigation, etc.
How did your interest in this spark?
I was so fascinated with robotics, in fact. I studied in Indonesia, Bandung, Institute of Technology Bandung. So I was involved with a lot of robotics works. So that was very fascinating. So I thought I would extend that into science of aircraft. But I think life have taken me in a different path. Instead of looking into aircraft, I end up actually looking into spacecraft, which was a great choice, I guess. And indeed, is extremely important and very strategic for the country. So I believe that I got to keep the Malaysian flag flying.
This is just, I guess, a digression from my space movie, a big part of your childhood?
Not at all. Not at all. I was basically very much interested, in fact, to see things move. So pretty much an engineering guy, I suppose, but not specifically space at that point of time.
So what do you make of this finding that the Earth is taking longer to complete one rotation?
To start with, this is a natural phenomenon, I would say. If you really look into our solar system, this is bound to happen. And we just have to live with it, in fact. Now, of course, as all of us know, we have different time zones. We have Greenwich time zones. We do have lots of coordinate systems that we have to facilitate our travel to space. We do have, local time systems, which I think most of us know. It is a standard time system that we have. So, yes, indeed, there should be a lot of actually corrections need to be done between the time systems, actually, depending on the conditions that actually the planet Earth goes through. But this is absolutely is a general and it's a natural phenomena that we have to actually look into. So there is, you can't stop the nature. You got to live with it. But there is a lot of correction factors actually we can introduce in order to actually correct those shortcomings. So I guess that is what actually we are looking at now.
So from a cursory reading of the report, this is not something new. Everyone who works in this field already know that this is happening. But when was it formalized? When was systems of rule implemented that every government, every country across the world will have to follow?
Yeah. In fact, if you look at the history, we started off with astronomers looking and studying planets, stars, etc. So they have actually also came up with the system themselves. They have coordinate systems. To start with, probably you have heard of terrestrial time. Astronomers do use terrestrial time to practically predict the position of planets with respect to the planet Earth. So the center of planet Earth with respect to all the other planets, including the stars, etc. But again, if you look at the modern astronomy, they've also used the atomic clock as their baseline, basically to mark the reference, which is indeed very, very precise, I must say. But on the other hand, we have some other systems as well. For example, the time that actually we've been using now, universal time. So universal time is made things easier for us, especially looking at the zone. Otherwise, we have to be working with the GMT before, remember? Greenwich time. But then incorporating the zones, that means you have the European zone, you have the American zone, you have the Asian zone, then it tallies extremely well with the lighting conditions that we have. We must understand that humans have to go through day and night. And the time that we have is 24 hours, has to be somehow or other, divided into these two zones for, I mean, biologically, in fact. So that is also actually a consideration when you want to actually design or consider a time frame. But again, I know there is a lot of issues regarding the time selected, especially the universal time that we have now. There's a lot of issues on correction. That means you need to actually look into the correction factors. People are a bit more worried about navigation systems because the accuracy will be compromised. You got to keep on watching for maybe natural disaster happening. And as opposed to that, we have to really understand also the interaction between our natural satellite, the moon. It's also influencing, the way planet Earth orbits. And that is something that we need to understand. So when we understand that, I think we can do the corrections accordingly.
Is that the main factor why this is happening, that the Earth is moving slower because of its interaction with the moon?
In fact, if you look at it, the other factors, I would say the pertinent factor that we can never change, but that we can always predict, is indeed the interaction between the natural satellite of planet Earth, which is the moon, and Earth. Don't forget, we do have other rigid bodies as well. For example, planets. For example, Sun. So in space mechanics, for example, in a space field, we treat this as a two-body problem, but we can extend the interaction up to maybe n-body problem, whereby you include other planets, especially, for example, Sun, how they interact. It all starts with the gravitational pull of these two bodies. Therefore, there is always a pull and push kind of effect. So if you look at only, zooming down to probably this particular issue on the rotation is getting slower. Yes, indeed. Reason being, the moon is basically interacting with the planet Earth, vice versa. And therefore, you have a permanent gravitational pull between these two bodies. Now, due to that, we have tides. And if you look at the planet Earth basically is covered with water. And water is not fixed to the Earth. It is quite mobile. It moves. So when there is a gravitational interaction between these two bodies, the water also tend to move. When water tend to move, water tend to actually introduce frictions with respect to a fixed surface of planet Earth. Now, don't forget the planet Earth is also rotating on its axis. So therefore, the friction will be created. When the friction created, therefore, planet Earth is going to lose its rotational speed. When it loses rotational speed, that energy has to be transferred somewhere because the balance of energy is still a number. You can't alter that. Energy cannot be destroyed. We can actually have an equivalence segregations of energy, but not actually destroyed. So it will be transferred in terms of kinetic energy into the actual orbital energy of the planet, the Earth, and of course the moon itself. That will actually help the moon to go faster. When moon goes faster, moon is going to go further from planet Earth. That's how the whole thing works, actually.
If I'm understanding this correctly, with climate change and the polar caps melting and more water coming to the oceans, would this exacerbate this problem?
Okay. As I've said, the permanent problem that we have is this gravitational issue, interaction between these two rigid bodies, if I consider only two-body problems. The effect of that for the rotation itself of planet Earth As you have also correctly mentioned, it is somewhere between about 1.4 to 1.7 milliseconds for about 100 years, which means that it's not too, critical in that sense. But don't forget that we do have other problems as well. If you look at in your environment, we have sometimes volcanic activities. We have tsunamis that all of us know. We have lots of climate change. All this introduces force. When you have force, there is action and reaction will take place. So inevitably, indirectly, the rotation is also affected. That is the reason you look at sometimes up to today. Remember the universal time that we have spoken about? The addition is already up to about already 37 seconds already till now. When we started off, we had added about 10. Then along the a couple of years, then we have added a second every now and then. And now we are at, hovering around somewhere about 37 to 40 seconds already. So what I'm trying to say is that we can only predict the interactions practically from the moon and the Earth. But climate change is very, very difficult for us to predict. So what exactly happens in this universal time frame? Well, we do have monitoring system. For example, we do we go back to actually the basic. The basic is still actually a second is basically has been sort of quantified with an oscillation of the atom itself. That is the basis. Then they have also introduced a correction factor whereby a good example would be looking at the GPS system itself to see the position and the time correction needed. So that is indeed our monitoring system. And the portion that need to be corrected is always been added to the actual oscillation. So therefore, you will get a real time. Now, unfortunately, the addition will only take place if it's above 0.9 seconds. Anything below that will not be added. So which means that we need to wait
for it to accumulate.
Accumulate up to 0.9 seconds. Now, if you are doing navigation, especially space navigation, it's supposed to be very, very precise. Now, if you have a system where the accuracy has been compromised, maybe only about 0.5 seconds, but it is still, it matters. So that is the reason the time frame that we have, in fact, the time system that we have, universal time, it is a concern for navigators. It's a concern for navigation system because you will introduce a systematic error. It's a residual, but the residual will be eliminated or compensated for if it reaches the threshold of 0.9. Then it will be included back to the time. Until then, it will not be corrected. But it doesn't make sense for you to correct every day. So we got to somehow or other live with it, so to say. And plus, if you look at the actual derivatives, just to give you an example, you don't see at the moment day and night pretty much, comfortable. We go to bed at night and wake up and here you are in front of me, interviewing me, right? Working hours, then about 6 o'clock, it's over, then you're back home and you get a rest. It seems to be excellent because you have the daylight and you have the, no light condition. Now, assume that actually this derivatives goes on. In coming years, many, many years later, can you imagine? You are coming to work, it is still dark at 8 o'clock. When you get back home, about 6 o'clock in the afternoon or in the evening, the sun will be just above you. Or when you want to go to bed, the sun is still above you. It will happen, but not at our lifetime for sure. It might take billions of years. In fact, if you look at it, remember, I've been telling you that there is this two-body interaction between the planet Earth and the moon. This will stop one day. The braking effect, or rather the friction due to the tides, will stop one day. Somewhere probably billions of years, when you keep on accumulating, then the planet Earth keep on slowing down. Until and then, the rotational speed of planet Earth, it is going to be equal one day with the actual orbital motion of the moon. So therefore, basically, both of these two bodies are basically are moving, so to say, moving at an equal pace. So there won't be any friction. Now, this, as I've said, this will take billions of years. At that point, when you reach that time, a day would be at least a month, which means you will see the sun once in a month. If you compare, let's say today we say that a day is 24 hours, a month is 30 days. But in that time frame, a month, or rather a day, would be equivalent to about 47 days or 50 days. So which means that to complete a day, it will take more than a month. After a month, you should be able to see, or rather to see the day and night every 50 days, for example.
This is mind-blowing stuff, but we'll take a short break and we'll come back and talk more. My guest today is Professor Dr. Renuka Varatha Raju, Deputy Vice Chancellor, Industry and Community Relations at University Putra Malaysia. You're listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antik. I have in the studio with me Professor Dr. Renugath Varatha Raju, Deputy Vice-Chancellor, Industry and Community Relations, University Putra Malaysia. He has a PhD in Spacecraft Systems, and we've been talking about this challenge of aligning universal time with terrestrial time. We have established that those are two different things. There is time, and then there is how fast the Earth spins. So before the break, you were explaining some of the technical challenges of adjusting or aligning our navigation system towards this time. And you give the example of space navigation. What about ships and planes and our mobile phones, computers? Because I remember the Y2K scare when at the turn of the millennium. Is this part of the problem as well?
Okay, as I've always mentioned, when you take a... I'll come to the Y2K problem. You see, in most of navigation works, in most of travel, trajectory planning, etc., lots of calculations are involved for sure. Now, most important input is basically the reference time. As I've mentioned before, if the reference time is not perfect, that means there is a residual. As I've mentioned, remember, you get corrections only when you hit 0.9 seconds. Then you get the correction. But if you don't get that, then there will be residual. So when you have residual, the prediction for navigation would not be actually accurate.
Reference time is the atomic clock.
Yes, in fact, the universal time that you have.
Right.
Because universal time is a corrected time, actually. It is not purely based on the atomic clock.
Right.
We do corrections, and then we introduce that. So, as I've said before, when it is not really accurate, so your prediction is also inaccurate. But we can live with that, or rather we have been living with that. Even the space station is using universal time. It's been working extremely well. So I think when we know that actual quantum, which need to be sort of corrected, I think the internal system should be able to actually do that. Now, Y2K is another problem. It's the manner that actually we have programmed before. You know, they've been using only two digits, the last two digits. You know, we have four digits to mark the years. But we took a shortcut basically because reason being, in terms of programming, it's much easier. When you work with four digits, then, you know, it's a computational burden, etc. So you end up actually using the last two digits to indicate the actual year. Now, what exactly happened? For year 2000, it'll be 00, right? Now, 00 means it's 1900. So the computer will get confused, actually. So that was actually the bug. It is not because of the navigation or even because of the universal time, not at all. It is practically, is the way that actually we've been doing things. So now I think most of the programs, even me, most of the programs that actually I do, I have four digits to mark the years. It's much easier. So even in 1,000 years later, you will not have a Y3K problem.
This practice of adding leap second was introduced in 1972, and since then, I think you mentioned we've added 30-odd seconds or so. Is this system sustainable indefinitely? Because you say there are some criticism of this correction mechanism.
Yeah, but it looks like we don't have any choice. We can't control. We can always predict, as I've said, the interaction between the moon and the planet Earth. We can predict that. But what about the natural phenomena? For example, you have some disasters. You have a tsunami. You have some volcanic activity, strong ones. We can't predict that. So as it comes, then we need to actually incorporate. There is no models at the moment can predict all these comings very soon. We wouldn't know. So that we need to deal with that. So that is the reason I don't think it is going to be changed as soon as possible in that sense. Now, the next thing is that if you look at the actual effect, the effect is that it can be somehow or other, we can live with the effect. Now, for the 30 or odd years, the correction is about almost about 30 seconds. It's not even a minute. So if you do a progression, assume that, well, I hope there won't be any natural disaster. I hope. Then we may not actually need 30 seconds for compensation in coming years. We may only probably need less than a second. As I've mentioned, you know, the two body problems that we have, you only need about 1.5 or rather 1.7 milliseconds for about 100 years to do the corrections. Practically, it is negligible. You won't even feel it.
But so there are no alternative to the leap second at the moment, despite the disruption.
Alternatives are always there. Innovations are always there. But
what's the most viable one right now that people
most
are working
on? Most cost-effective is what I want to say. A lot of system has been built upon, universal time. If you want to revamp, you want to change, it is not going to be easy. Because you need to actually come up with a new system supported by maybe the old system until you really move to a new system. It is basically practically just like running a new operation system or other operating system for your computer. You need to steal a lot of documents already been done in the old operating system. So you need to actually practically redo the whole thing, right? In order for you to operate. So it is going to cost you. So now it's not the innovation part. We can come up with any systems that we want. It's all the standards or norm that actually human have set. It has been agreed, internationally agreed. Everybody is fine with that. Then it becomes a norm. So if we want to reinvest for a new system, where the money is going to come from and who's going to take the lead? So that is again as an issue. So that is the reason it's more cost effective to stay with the old system.
This leap second correction started in 1972, but space programs have already started before then. How were they compensating for the difference between UT and CT?
Very simple. They'll be only considering the actual two-body interaction or three-body interaction. But as I've said, if you look at it 1 or 2 second, that will actually, of course, that is going to affect your actual positioning, your actual accuracy in terms of second also. But it is not going to be in terms of minutes or even hours at that point of time. Remember, 1950s is the year that actually human have gone to space. So it's not too far, you know. Just about 20 years later, they had this whole system consolidated and corrected. So it is absolutely fine.
During the time when dinosaurs roamed the Earth, it took only 23 hours for the planet to complete one rotation.
Exactly.
Would we ever come back to a time where the Earth would spin faster that we need to reduce rather than add a leap second?
Yes and no. If it happens, I think it's going to be very disastrous for planet Earth. The energy cannot be created. Energy balance is always fixed. Energy will take in a different form, but the total will be still the same. Now, likewise, our solar system, it has certain energy. We call it the whole system, we call it an orbital energy. For any particular systems, we have orbital energy. So that is more or less is fixed. But it could change, interchange. Now, assume that there is a huge object bigger than planet Earth flies in coming years, maybe not the 100 years or 200 years, an object that we haven't discovered yet, fly by planet Earth. Assume that that object has a huge capacity in terms of gravitational pull. It may alter the rotation of planet Earth, not only the rotational, but also the trajectory of planet Earth. That is the reason you may not have four climax maybe anymore. You may have maybe six or seven climax. You never know. Yeah. So it is possible. Theoretically, it is possible. But you need, as I've said, it is an influence of another body. Just like Moon and planet Earth. Likewise, you need a huge mass coming and maybe flying by planet Earth. Not collision, of course. But flying by, that will alter the actual orbit and, of course, the rotational speed. It could go either way. Planet Earth might lose all the speeds, or it could actually increase all the speeds. Depends how it has been flown, or rather how it flies by.
So for a planet that has many, many natural satellites, is the interaction more intense then?
Oh, yes. Yes. But again, remember, the gravitational pull is what matters. Moon enjoys only about 20% of the actual gravitational intensity as opposed to planet Earth, if you compare to planet Earth. So practically the interaction would not be so great. You know, it could be a huge body, but when there is no gravitational field, then it's as good as nothing. It's just a debris for us. So what matters is that the gravitational interaction.
At the World Radio Communications Forum in 2015, yes, the decision was supposed to be made on whether or not they wanted to abolish the leap second, mm-hmm, but it was deferred to 2023.
Yeah.
What were the pros and cons of wanting to abolish the leap second if, as you mentioned, it would be so costly?
Inaccuracy and costly. They have to actually come up with a system. But in any case, whatever new system that actually we come up with, we still have to go back and do the correction. Now, why I say so, we cannot predict natural disaster. We wouldn't know when is the next tsunami. When it happens, then we have to compensate. So you can never have a system. If it's a system where it's so comprehensive, we don't have to actually do a correction, it's a standalone system, then we should just pray that actually there won't be any natural disaster or even a strong climate change, which will induce a reduction in speed, or rather rotational speed of planet Earth. That we have to pray for that. I think, my hope is that planet Earth would not have any problems in coming years, no natural disasters, everything in harmony, and we just have to worry about these two bodies, which is planet Earth and Moon. And then practically we are fine, and one fine day, even that will stop. Because as I've said, when the rotational speed has the same pace, then you wouldn't have the friction, and therefore you wouldn't have a reduction in the rotational speed of planet Earth. So billions of years. Now let's wait for that fine day then.
Yeah, billions. You painted this future scenario where a day would take a month to complete. At what point then would we need to start revisit or reconsider this 24-hour day system?
Very good question. Now, I would say that we need to actually sit and think. Are we fine to have, 15 hours of sun? Are we fine 20 hours of sun? Or vice versa? So now it looks like a very good proportion. 12 hours of daylight, 12 hours of, I would say night. Yeah. But if that actually alter, then we need to decide what is our threshold. So accordingly, a new norm might be actually triggered. So it's all the way, then of course, the way of life will change as well. The way we function will change. The way we operate, or rather the way that actually we work will also change. Everything will change. Because as I've said, the day and night, what determines the actual life, right? So that will change. When that changes, the way that we operate also will change. So that all of us have to agree. For example, how we've started working at 8 o'clock and we finish at 5 or 6, right? Why not actually we finish at 6? Or why not we start at 12 and we finish at maybe late at night? Of course, we do have some call centers doing otherwise, but generally... So that is something, a norm that all of us have agreed. So we have to actually go back to the drawing board and to look at that when that time comes. But let me tell you that it is going to be thousands of years. If we decide to actually relook the way that actually we operate.
Thank you very much for speaking to us. Professor Dr. Renugath Varatharaju, Deputy Vice Chancellor, Industry and Community Relations at University Putra, Malaysia. You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.